Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Out the First. It is September the 5th, 2024. I'm Ryan Bellinger. Thanks for being here. We've got a bunch of things to discuss. One's kind of more business-minded. One's a little bit more about professional golf. And then we'll wrap it all up with a final salute to one of the OGs of golf Twitter and golf social entertainment, who seemingly announced like he's going to be hanging it up today. Thanks again for being here. Whether you're watching live, catches a podcast after the fact, watches a video after the fact, I appreciate it. Happy to take your comments during the show. I learned yesterday that when you comment, I can't respond to you unless I respond to you during the actual show. So I appreciate any comments that you leave during the show. I'm happy to respond to them during the show instead of trying to do it after the fact and obviously failing because you can't do that. So today, let's start with talking about Topgolf. We're talking about the Topgolf Callaway golf situation, give you the background on that, and then kind of spin it forward to explain what's going on with that. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the 2025 early LIV golf schedule that was released and what that should tell us, or what I believe that tells us about how LIV feels about its future. And then we'll talk about Club Pro Guy at the end. So Topgolf Callaway, they merged together and formed their own company in 2021. When Callaway bought the rest of Topgolf that it didn't already own. Callaway was an early investor, very smart early investor in the Topgolf concept when it came over here from overseas. And it really started to kind of burgeon as this idea of bringing people into the game and growing the game. And they were bringing people in to play golf at a place that wasn't a golf course and felt a little bit more like a bar or a nightclub or maybe even a bowling alley, but it was working, right? And Callaway, even during their leanest times, had allocated money to having a percentage of this business. So in October 2020, they wound up buying the rest of from Topgolf as Callaway, right? It closes in March 2021. Callaway values Topgolf at like $2 billion. They agree to take on $555 million of debt that that Topgolf had. And their debt profile was pretty huge. They combined into one company. They renamed their stock. It's going to be Topgolf Callaway Brands. They even lead with Topgolf. That's how important they thought Topgolf was to the business. And off they run. And they're opening aggressively, opening new venues. Everything seemingly going very well. They're charging premium prices. The prices go up over time in terms of hourly rates for the bays. And they're rapidly expanding. This year kind of started to hit a wall, however. And we started to hear that commentary from Topgolf Callaway CEO Chip Brewer, especially heard in the second quarter call, which was in August. And if you're not an investor, that doesn't really matter to you. Basically, what Chip Brewer said is we're starting to see decreased foot traffic and 8% lower sales at our existing venues, ones that have been open, not the new ones. The new ones are doing great. They continue to expand. They're the lifeblood of the business for Topgolf. And everything else that the company owns between Callaway Golf and Jack Wolfskin and Ogio and Travis Matthew, they're all doing fine, growing a little, flat a little, whatever. But they're not hurting anything. They're just kind of there, right? But the problem is with Topgolf's business model, it seems like it really depends on having new venues sprout up consistently, having more customers come in because you're seeing fewer people coming back and spending that money. So what they've realized is they are having a hard time maintaining and keeping customers. So what they're going to do is they're going to take the Topgolf business and spin it off into its own company, and they're going to keep everything else into it itself. All the brands that I mentioned before, including Callaway Golf and Toptracer, by the way, which is a smart thing. If they ever sell Topgolf to somebody else, then they get a royalty check every year for using the Toptracer technology, which is a pretty sly move, actually, if you think about it from a business perspective. But they made this announcement yesterday, and this came, 6 months after a report from a Korean outlet in March that this basically exact thing was going to happen, that someone was going to buy Callaway Golf of Korean interest, Topgolf was going to be spun off into its own company, and they were going to be two separate companies. At the time, Callaway was like, we're not aware of such negotiations, we're not aware of such talk. And then in August, when they did the quarterly call, they said, well, yeah, we might do a strategic review. And then a few weeks later, strategic review over, Topgolf's going to be its own company. So Topgolf, the new company, will have cash in the balance sheet, and it's going to have its financial debt eliminated. That will be absorbed by the new separate Callaway. So the new Top Golf will still have to care for its obligations for venue development, the cost of that. But otherwise, Top Golf is going to be its new company. As far as I can see, Top Golf's got a bunch of problems. And I wrote an article about this for our members at golfnewsnet.com, and I won't bore you with the whole thing, but kind of the top points for me, and you can join. I would love to have you as a member if you'd like to read it and take a look at it. And I'll probably do a separate video on this another time. But at least for the purposes of this conversation, I think there are really like four issues. The first and foremost is their target audience, right? The target audience is a casual golfer at best, right? Not really hardcore golfers, like people who watch a show, people talking about golf for a living. So they're trying to capture a more fickle audience, an audience that will change with trends and with their finances and their interest and time. And if you think about that, that affects all kinds of businesses. That affected bowling many years ago, affects Topgolf now, it affects breweries. It affects all kinds of things that people do on the weekends, bars, restaurants, all of it, right? Entertainment options are only as wide as you can open your wallet or your pocketbook. So if you don't have as much money as you once did, and that's another reason, then why are you going to go to a place that is a premium experience? As I mentioned, it's a lot of money to go to Topgolf. It's $37 per hour to rent a bay at a minimum. At the maximum, the busiest hours or the premium hours, primetime hours, it's $70 an hour. So if you're just going to work on your game, that's a non-starter. You can't do that. If you're going with your family, and some people are younger and don't have that same kind of constraint, but I have a family of four. If I want to take my family, it's not like we're splitting the cost. It's not like you and I are going to split it and you know, two other people come in and it's less than $18 an hour, and that's not so bad. No, that's not happening. So if you're going to spend a couple hours there, especially on a Friday, Saturday night, you're going to spend a minimum of $140 before you even order food and drinks, right? So if it's not geared toward a golfing audience, right, you have to really rely on the fickle nature of these consumers. But you also don't have facilities for golfers, and you don't have pricing for golfers. And I wouldn't show up to a Topgolf to use their range. Not because it's bad, but because that's not what it's for. It's not that atmosphere. And the Toptracer stuff that you get is cool, but it's not enough information for me to pay an hourly rate instead of a by bucket rate that could get at a driving range. And I could, for the cost of going to Topgolf enough times, get my own launch monitor and take it with me, right? So that audience evaluation is part of the problem. Second part is just maintaining the facility. So I went a couple weeks ago to my local Topgolf in Germantown, Maryland. Went for a friend's birthday party. Big group of us, like 20 people. We had two bays. None of us played, but it was a nice time. And I found multiple grips that were ripped, or one was just clean ripped half off of a kid's club. So a kid can only hold the grip with one hand and swing it, which is horrible. That shows to me that you don't really care about your equipment and your facility. The golf balls looked very beat up. Looked like they had been hit and cleaned thousands of times. And that's a sign that you don't care about your facility as much as you want me to care about it. And that makes it hard to pay a premium price, right? If you don't have good equipment, if you don't have things in shape, if you don't have good infrastructure, even soft infrastructure, you're going to have a problem. So I think that that's something that needs to be addressed. There needs to be a plan to kind of cycle out the soft equipment more frequently. You got to change those grips on those golf clubs at least once a year, preferably twice a year. And you're an equipment manufacturer in Callaway, so you can surely find a way to acquire grips at a reasonable cost, at a very low unit cost, and change these things out. You can get new golf balls. You can cycle those in and out. Just keep the experience feeling premium. And then, of course, you've got to always update those mats and things like that. Those things cost money. I understand. Not saying I'm spending somebody else's money, but that's a perception problem that happens here. And then the biggest thing here beyond customer experience and pricing is the other side of the coin in pricing. It costs a whole lot more money now to build a venue. Inflation has ravaged not only the consumer, but also the construction industry. There's no such thing as free money anymore. You know, the idea of having 2% and 3% interest rates at the beginning of the pandemic, that's long gone, right? Even though the interest rates are going to come down significantly starting this fall, they're not going to get back to where they were, most likely, right? So free money's gone. The free money train of just building a venue, letting it pay itself back really quickly, that's done. Because also construction costs and material costs have gone up 20, 30, 40% in some cases. So it's not as easy to just build a venue and get the payback really quickly. So you have to expand slower. So moving forward, Callaway's or Topgolf, which is going to be its own company, they say by the second half of the year, next year, they're going to have to focus on the venues they've already got. And for me, that means creating memberships for golfers, golfer pricing, grind, you know, for the people who actually want to practice golf. You've got to have more specials. You've got to attract people to the bar and restaurant, not just when they're using the venue, but to come and have a good time and maybe create watch parties and those types of things. But you've got to focus on your existing customers. You've got to make those investments in them. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a separate video, but I thought that was a really important piece of information because it tells you a little something about where the consumer is. And if that trickle-down effect has kind of started in Topgolf, it may eventually start to happen, not in the same way and maybe not as viciously, but it may start to happen at golf courses as well. So that tells you where maybe the consumer is or where the consumer is going. Second story today, I want to talk about LIV Golf and its 2025 schedule. They have not put out the full thing, right? They haven't done that yet, but they have announced the first four events for their third full season, fourth season in total. And the intrigue to me is that all of the events are not based in the United States, not even North America, not a single one. So they start the year next year, like they have in the last couple, in February at Riyadh. They're going to start with Saudi Arabia, and they're going to get that event done, off the docket, anything that comes with it, get it out of the way, have that done. And they're going to move it from the King Abdullah Economic City to Riyadh. So that's kind of part of the marketing of trying to make Riyadh a bigger destination for the Saudis. Whatever you think of that, that is what it is. Then they're going to go to Australia, going to go to Adelaide, their most popular event, 2 weeks later at the Grange Golf Club, the place with the watering hole, really good atmosphere from all accounts. It's by far their most popular event. It's their biggest win. They're going to have that second. Then they're going to go back to Hong Kong once again and Singapore in a two-week run. So you're not going to see an event on LIV Golf in the United States until at least April based on basically a schedule, a proposed schedule that's been handed out to players and discussed over the course of the summer. What this tells me, in combination with that proposed schedule has just a handful of events in the United States, is that LIV recognizes something about their future as a business if they're going to continue down this path. And that is their best path of acceptance and commercial success is being this world tour, is trying to be more of a world tour, not as focused in the United States, not as focused in having events in this country, but having them elsewhere. Their events in Australia and Spain and England, Australia and England in particular, are their best events. The ones in America, so-so. The Nashville one did very well this year, I thought. The one in Boston and Chicago in the first season, maybe put them aside because of the newness of LIV Golf, but they also did very well. But by and large, it's kind of a mediocre response in terms of commercial response and what that means for TV ratings. The TV ratings have basically been what they've been, and they really haven't changed, plus or minus. If you netted it all out, it's about what it is. Now, the folks at LIV would tell you, go check the streaming numbers, and we could talk about that if they ever put them out. But from a TV perspective, it doesn't seem to matter from a viewership standpoint whether LIV is being played live on the CW, whether it's being tape delayed, whether the best players are in contention or not. It really doesn't seem to matter. So their focus on bringing these experiences to different parts of the world, the ones where they've had the most international success, it makes a lot of sense. It tells you that the domestic market isn't a failure. This isn't a total failure for them. I mean, for the money they've spent, you might think that. But in terms of relative success, they've had the most bang for their buck, the most commercial interest, the most sponsorship interest abroad. Go play that game, see where it is. You start with a schedule. Then this year, you had seven events in the United States, still two left to be played in this country. You're going to have five next year. Does that mean they will finish the season in this country? I don't know. That's still to be determined, I suppose. But I do find that interesting that LIV's kind of leaning into the international side of things. That was Greg Norman's vision for this 30 years ago when he challenged Tim Fincham to create this world tour idea. And it's seemingly going to be the way that it goes now with LIV Golf. So we'll see what happens in 2025 there. Finally, I want to wrap everything up on a shorter show today with a salute to Club Pro Guy. So Club Pro Guy has been, I don't know, creating content for like 10 years, 10, 12. It feels like it's been 10 years. I could be completely wrong with that, but I feel like it's been a decade. I feel like he's been around a while. And he's been making videos and satirical content and all kinds of fun stuff that lives on Twitter slash X and YouTube and Facebook and all these things. And he's created all kinds of, he's basically created a universe of characters around himself and his green staff and his boss and his GM and his groundskeeper and the cart girls and all the different stuff. And, you know, some people may find some of that stuff offensive. And that's kind of the point of satire, is to sometimes offend you. But he was trying to kind of pull back the curtain with a wink and a nod to golf and kind of the ridiculousness of golf culture. And he did that really, really well, I thought. And so it was kind of surprising for me today to see that he announced, at least in a video, that he's stepping away from the industry. And he played it off so well. He played it off as him being fired from his job at a golf course in Kansas City, because now it's been acquired by the county and the county wants to run it and they don't want him to do all of the horrible things that he does. So they're letting him go. And then also he's closing down the dream of building 3 Jack National, which was supposed to be like this super mega hard public golf course that actually was prescient in terms of making fun of the run of private golf clubs that are being built in the United States right now. It actually is even funnier in retrospect. And then also said that he would be offering 50% off of his gear at his website, which if you're interested in that kind of stuff, go get the merch. But that was a surprise to me today. I was very surprised that he was walking away. I mean, he has slowed down over the years. And there's always been rumors, at least that I've heard, that the original CPG sold the concept to someone else. And that person's been doing it for years. And now they're walking away. I don't know. But I do remember the one time that the guy, and I don't know if it was the original second, if there was a first or a second, but CPG, his real name was tweeted out by PGA Tour Communications because he was filling in, I believe, for Tony Romo in the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. And they explained that this person, well, I forget their name in a second, was subbing in for Romo, who did WD. And people responded like, who the heck is this? And then people started to do Googling and put two and two together and realized that person was Club Pro guy. So the guy got to play in all kinds of events and probably made a fair amount of money and probably did okay for himself in this little side quest that he had to be a satirical, crappy golf professional. I think that's amazing. I think it's amazing that's possible. And it's kind of paved the way for a different breed of content, right? So many people have created content now that do it creatively. I'm not saying that CPG was a direct influence on No Laying Up or Bob Does Sports or Rick Shields or Peter Finch, all these guys that kids are making content now. Not saying that at all. But he found a way to make it possible, make it funny, engaging, satirical. And I appreciate that and I respect it, even if I didn't always love the content. I thought a lot of it was pretty spot on in the end. So a salute to him for a great run, assuming this isn't just some kind of joke that that's in like a new thing and a new chapter in CPG. And if it does, hey, fine, that's cool by me. And then also, I just before we started recording this, I saw that Dan Rappaport is leaving Foreplay over at Barstool Sports. Apparently his contract ran out, and I guess that was the time to kind of start thinking about doing something different. I don't know what that means for him, but you know, if the industry, this is a tough industry, an extremely tough industry, and to be able to try it, and he wants to go out and make it on his own, perhaps. We'll see. But surviving in this industry is extremely difficult. Surviving in media is extremely hard. You got to get lucky. You got to work extremely hard. Stuff nobody ever sees. And it is hard to do. So if you can survive and continue and grow and thrive, all the more power to you. All the respect in the world to people who can do that. So salute of sorts to Dan Rappaport as well. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show. Thanks so much for spending some time with me. I appreciate it. Probably not going to do a show tomorrow. I'm supposed to be playing golf, and we kind of dedicated ourselves to doing shows Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, but with Labor Day, I wanted to kind of spin it forward today. So we'll come back next week. We have the Solheim Cup next week. We're going to be live at the Solheim Cup at RTJ. Can't wait for that. So cool to have the Solheim Cup in the DMV area. Going to be experiencing that all week. So we'll have guests. We'll have pop-ins. I'm sure we'll have all kinds of people, not only on this show, but a new show that will be launching just on GNN TV, and just waiting to get a couple pieces of technical stuff from my end or from our partner's end. And then we can actually start showing you GNN TV next week. I cannot wait. It kind of dovetails really nicely. The dream is coming true. You can leave me a comment, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, Blue Sky, @RyanBallenge, Facebook, YouTube, Ryan Ballenge Golf, and then Golf News Net's a handle on every social media service. Thanks again for watching or listening to the show, and we will catch you next week.